But first, Mike Sacks. Mike hosts a podcast called Doing It with Mike Sacks. He's also the author of Poking a Dead Frog. In both the podcast and the book, he features interviews with some of today's top comedy writers. He's spoken with innovators, including Parks and Recreation and The Good Place creator Mike Schur, legend Mel Brooks, and Onion writer Carol Kolb. Mike says that we're living in a golden age of comedy.
Well, I think that compared with 15, 20 years ago, there's a lot more opportunities now for anyone. So a 14, 15-year-old girl in Maryland can compete with the best New Yorker writers by having as many readers potentially. She has that opportunity to do that. A sketch group in the middle of the country can post videos to their site that can be viewed as many times as the most popular professional comedic group. So just because one has the opportunity does not mean that they can then become instantly famous or instantly successful, but the opportunity is there and it never used to be there.
There's this perception that all comedy writers are miserable, and I'm curious, based on your conversations with so many different comedy writers and your own work as a comedy writer, do you think that's true?
Yep, I do. The thing is, though, everyone's miserable. We just happen to hear about it from comedy writers. You know, I think if you were to go into your dentist, he'd be miserable, but his job is not to tell you jokes about how his relationship with his wife is breaking up. I don't know if comedy writers are more miserable than other occupations. We do happen to hear about it more. I do think that there's a strong connection between depression, anxiety, and OCD in comedy, specifically OCD. And I only asked these writers because I too suffer from OCD. I asked David Sedaris. He's written about it, so I knew the answer to this, but he was talking about it. And from there, I would ask each of the writers if they happen to suffer from it. And I would say about 75% suffer from symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder. But what's interesting is a lot of these writers use that compulsion, that feeling of compulsion, to write every day. And because of that, it sort of feeds into their success. So they funnel that energy rather than washing their hands or licking light poles or whatever. They funnel that obsessiveness into having to write every day. And if they don't, they get anxious. So it's not a pleasant way to live necessarily, but they've taken the best of a bad situation and have made the best of it.
I have some OCD tendencies myself, and I can see where it would be handy, especially for stand-up comedy, where because I've tried stand-up comedy a bit over the years, and I could see where it would come in handy when you have to rework bits, where you have to do the same material over and over, and then figure out which parts didn't work, which did, and rework it. I could see where OCD would also possibly be a benefit there.
Oh, definitely. Very specific work. It's like working on jewels. Very concentrated, little changes day after day after day until you get it right. You absolutely do need an obsessiveness. And what's interesting, too, is even someone like Mel Brooks, whom I interviewed, you still sense that he's obsessive. Even with all the accomplishments he has achieved, he's still obsessive about working and getting the laugh, which I found fascinating. So for him, it was never about money. It was never about anything but producing laughs and writing comedy and performing comedy, and he still feels the same way.
When I look at you, I don't get insecurity. When I look at your comedy, there's never been a hint of insecurity coming from your comedy.
No.
Is that fair?
It is. I've never shown it, but there is an enormous amount of anxiety behind it, but I'm a brilliant and skilled performer and actor. It's true.
Yes,
and I
yes,
cover it with a great deal of bravado.
Yes.
One of the things that I think really defines great comedy is the element of surprise. There's this Albert Brooks quote that you've probably come across in an interview where he says that, to me, the whole point of comedy is just to go bleeping crazy and try things that are as wild as your brain can think of and do them again if they don't work. Do them again. Believe me, the audience comes to you. And I guess Andy Kaufman could be the spokesmodel for this idea. Yet it seems to me anyway that there are certain standard tropes that people find inherently funny. So my question is, how do you find a balance between the element of surprise and freshness and still maintain the comedy?
Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, if you go back thousands of years to Aristophanes' plays, you can see jokes that you would hear at any comedy, I mean, not the same jokes, you're not going to hear donkey jokes, I guess, but the same jokes about humans and human behavior and sex and bodily functions and all this sort of thing. And we're all wired to recognize certain human behavior. So it's a matter of working within that framework while also standing out. That's the real trick. Now, what's interesting is Albert Brooks is a genius, and his stand-up was absolutely amazing. But the problem with that sometimes is that you can be ahead of your time with both his movies and his stand-up.
Here I am, 5 years into my career. I have no more material left. It surprised the hell out of me. I'll be honest with you, last Thanksgiving, while you people were celebrating, I was down to my last bit. I ignored all those time to write more signs, and I'll tell any young comedians watching, if you get down to the last 20%, it's as good as nothing. Okay, now look, I think there's more inside of me. There has to be more bits in here. It's just at this time in my life, it's so deep that I'll do injury to myself to go in and get it.
So it's also a matter of not just putting good work out there that works within the framework that's different from anyone else. It's also timing. And to be too ahead of your time sometimes, especially when it comes to comedy, is not necessarily a good thing for your career. It can be a very frustrating career.
Well, and Steve Martin also has talked about, I mean, in his memoir, Born Standing Up, about being kind of ahead of his time and just sort of willing to embrace that, to do this weird material and to make it clear to the audiences when he was first starting out that, hey, this is funny. I think this is funny.
But that was a rare case of him doing what he wanted to do, doing it very differently, and hitting huge. You know, he would fill stadiums. Very, very, very rare. I don't know of any other case that was like, I mean, Richard Pryor eventually, but that took years after he had changed his act. And yeah, but Steve Martin, it comes down to, I think, the fact he's just brilliant, and the writing was phenomenal, as was the performance.
Hey, I don't like to gear my material to the audience, but I'd like to make an exception because I was told that there is a convention of plumbers in San Francisco this week, and I understand about 30 of them came down to the show tonight. So before I come out, I worked up a joke especially for the plumbers. And now those of you who aren't plumbers probably won't get this and won't think it's funny, but I think those of you who are plumbers will really enjoy this. And so if you're not a plumber, please just bear with me for a while and just kind of hold off on this, but I would like to do this for the plumbers. So here we go. This lawn supervisor was out on a sprinkler maintenance job. And he started working on a Finlay sprinkler head with a Langstrom 7-inch gangly wrench. Well, just then a little apprentice leaned over and said, you can't work on a Finlay sprinkler head with a Langstrom 7-inch wrench. Well, this infuriated the supervisor, so he went and got volume 14 of the Kinsley manual. And he reads to him and says, the Langstrom 7-inch wrench can be used with a Finlay sprocket. Just then, the little apprentice leaned over and says, it says sprocket, not socket. Are those plumbers supposed to be here this show, or was that...
You talked to a guy named Tom Sharpling about his radio show, The Best Show on WFMU, which aired on the independent community radio station WFMU from 2000 to 2013. This is a show with a huge cult following. Can you tell me about it? What's it about?
This show is pretty amazing. This is some long-form comedy, meaning 30, 45, one-hour-long bits, which you do not see anywhere else. It reminds me of a modern Bob and Ray in the sense that Tom would play records, he would take calls, and every show or most shows, he would receive a call from a character played by John Worster, who's also an amazing drummer for Bob Mould and Superchunk and the Mountain Goats. Brilliant guy. And he would play these characters that would confuse the radio audience. The radio audience would not know this was a put-on. He would go on for 15, 20 minutes, take calls, incensed the callers. Tom would play off him. Tom was a great straight man. And they would just create this world. And they created a world called Newbridge, which was an imaginary town in New Jersey. This town almost became like the Simpsons town in that there was hundreds of characters. There was direct relations between certain characters. It was a history of Newbridge. And over the years, like a very, very strange, like Wobegon, it just grew and grew and grew, and to the point that it became sort of a cult favorite among top comedy writers.
You also talked to someone that we wouldn't necessarily think of as a comedy writer, the novelist and short story writer George Saunders, who admittedly his fiction is very funny. Well, why did you want to talk to him?
Well, that was one of the things I was thinking about when writing this book. Who is a comedy writer? Is it someone who sits in a room and writes jokes for TV only? And I eventually decided just to go with anyone who made me laugh. And George makes me laugh. I think he's a genius. He's also an incredibly smart teacher of writing. He teaches at Syracuse. His reputation is as one of these teachers who can make a connection with audiences, who came at writing from a different angle. He was an engineer. He didn't always start off wanting to be or working as a writer. And I think what he does is combine comedy and horror and satire better than any other writer out there now that I know of. You know, he's not a comedy writer in the strict sense. I would label him a serious writer, but I've always found what he does funny, if only on a deeper level, perhaps, than a late night show.
Mike Sacks is a comedy writer and the host of the podcast Doing It with Mike Sacks. He's also the author of Poking a Dead Frog, Conversations with Today's Top Comedy Writers. Find out more about Mike at WPR.org/beta.
It was my favorite show to write about because there was so much to unpack, so many levels on which everything took place, and there's barely been anything in the year since it ended that has given me quite the same level of joy when it comes time to do any kind of episodic recapping.
That's Rolling Stone's chief TV critic Alan Sepinwall on the AMC series Mad Men. He and fellow TV critic Matt Zoller-Seitz join us next. That's coming up in a minute. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.